For August the 7th, 2015, we talk about voting for PlayStation Plus games, Abyss Odyssey, and we ask you about your favorite game quotes. Welcome to the 115th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Jella Prendes.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, everybody, how is it going?
I don't know how to feel. I don't have a Ben to throw off at the end of the statement.
I know, right? Yeah, just the fact that Ben is so Ben went to a new apartment, and when you go to a new apartment, there is no internet there. You have to bring a man over to put the internet in your walls
and sacrifice him to the internet gods.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say there's Wi-Fi. A mini quest and
questing. So he is not able to join us. But Jala, thank you so much for standing in.
Yes, it's what I do.
Although I know you're actually standing.
I could. You want me to? I can stand on my head. Show?
Join me.
You should stand on your head.
Join me in the standing. It's great.
Don't stand on your head, then the words will come through upside down.
Oh my gosh. Standing, your mic technique gets so much better because you're like, if you're fidgeting like I do and shifting your weight, you're staying like, oh boy, it's like there's a fishing line tied between my lower lip and the SM7B. I'm just like, yeah, let's do this.
So can I tell you guys about a cross that I have to bear while podcasting every week?
Yes.
It's not, you know, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I have it really.
He is literally carrying a giant cross.
Yeah, it's funny. I brought it up as a joke one time, and he took it serious. And I never told him he didn't have to do it.
Yeah. But since having a baby, our cats have been thoroughly demoted, and they know their place in the world now, and they know that they never get any attention. So any opportunity they see to corner one of us, sans baby, is. No pun intended, but pounced upon.
So you're fighting off cats?
So literally the entire podcast will be fighting off cats who want nothing more to climb into my lap, climb over my keyboard, try to pull things off of the table with their tails. It's a thing my cats do. It's weird. I acknowledge that.
They've got grappling hooks. It's great.
Yeah, it's like night vision goggles and it's some scary stuff. If you've ever seen the movie Cats
versus
Dogs.
Who does not want a grappling hook attached to their butt?
But anyway, so if at any point you hear like a and you know crashing, you'll know exactly what happens. But it's basically the entire time I'm podcasting, I'm kind of pushing my arms out and away from me to knock back cats.
So you're in the fucking Heisman pose.
Yeah, basically the Heisman cat pose for a solid, you know, 2.5 hours or however long we do this.
Hey, that's a good workout.
It is, you know, yeah, I get a nice little burn in. Right now, one of them is just got his head butted up against me, is trying to push me.
He's trying to push you.
Yeah, push me off my chair. I don't think he understands the concept of, you know, mass and how much he weighs versus how much I weigh. It is getting me to try to shove him away though, which I think he loves. So, just good. For anyone listening, you can just imagine me fighting off like a coordinated. Ah, he licked me. Two cat effort here. So.
It's funny. You have two cats and I never hear them. Gary has one and we hear him on every episode.
No, I was going to say just Gary's cat, you know?
I think mine are sulking is what it is. They're demotion. They're kind of, it's a very persistent bid for attention, but it's a very sullen bid for attention.
Yeah. He talks into the silver sphere, but not to us.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't want to prolong the rambling section at the beginning of the show, Dennis, but this is a wonderful time for you because your son just celebrated his first birthday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a really fun weekend activity. And we being me, David, and Cole got to hang out in person a little bit.
Yeah, we got to play some cornhole because we live in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's mandatory for any gathering over 5 people.
Yep. You know, because one person can watch and double check the scores. Yes. Yeah, yeah, but
it's got to be regulation.
I got to tell you, your kid's chill as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what we did to get that right, but... Yeah.
Like just a room full of people like clapping and like still like talking directly at him, and he's like, yeah, cool, I'm here.
Yeah, Cole and I were talking during the proceedings, you know, I think we were both more uncomfortable with the large crowd than Luke was.
he hasn't learned to fear the dark side of humanity the way that we have. I'm sure that will come with experience.
Well, here's the thing. Like,
you are so full of puns. Dark side, Luke. Here we go again with that. Okay.
Man, he's doing it inadvertently. He's channeling. He's channeling some kind of punster. But just like, you know, I'm scrunched against the back wall while your kid is eating his birthday cake. It's like, and you just like it's nothing, you know?
Yeah, so. I think we were a little bit blown away by how many people, like we don't have a small house and we've got a huge yard, but it was just filled with people, and that made us feel very special and made us feel like Luke was very loved. And that was really special. So
yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, my congratulations go out to you, Jen, and you know, your family. And I would urge everybody listening to extend your congratulations as well, because this has been a cool year for you. And, we are very happy for you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for being a part of it.
Yeah. Your family is just the cutest thing. That is all.
I credit Jen with that. She's the one who makes us look good.
Awesome. Yeah. Also kind of along with that, you're bringing the dadding back, right?
I am. Yeah. So there's the first post in probably 9 or 10 months.
About a year since your stroke, right?
Yeah. So it was kind of a weird combination of things. Cause I had the big post about having a stroke, and that was this big emotional, like me processing thing. And then I had a kid. And it's, you know, so it was so, you know, life that hit me like a freight train, I say right at the top. And it was like a combination of just, you know, having a kid and having no time. And then like, what do I post next to top? Like, I feel like I've played my card. And so, you know, I just kind of got enough distance from that to feel like, okay, I don't need to build on that or anything. That was valuable exactly for what it was. That doesn't require a follow-up, at least right now. We'll see if I ever have more to say about it. But, you know, I kind of just wanted to do a year in review, and his first birthday felt like the right place. Exciting news on top of that is a frequent contributor to this show, Jeffrey Lawton.
From podcasts.
to this show through comments, to other shows through podcasts, to pretty much everything. A man about the internet. But he just had a kid, I think two months ago-ish.
Yep, yep.
Geo Bill.
Yeah, Geo Bill. It's not yet a law. and I've been talking with him about dadding type stuff for a long time now. And just thought, hey, this is great. We both want to do something family related. I've kind of already started something, and it'll be easier on both of us if we can rotate posts. So the August post will be him, and then the one after that will be me, and we'll just kind of alternate back and forth.
Yeah,
it's accountability also.
Accountability,
yeah, very much so. Yeah. Well, and I think I said this at the beginning of the dadding, and him and I talked about this, that you know it's really just kind of a personal journal, and the fact that there are people reading is a kind of carrot or stick, depending on how you look at it, to get us to actually do it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So go to duckfeed.tv/thedadening, or if you're just on the main page, go up to the read tab at the top, and you'll see a big list of the blogs that are there to check out Dennis and Jeffrey Lawton's work.
Yay.
And I've said it on other shows, but I'll say it here, not to like swoop in and steal any thunder, but Hex Crank is coming back in a big bad way, everybody. Yeah, so this is it's coming, it's a rumbling, and I'm doing a bunch of new stuff with it, so look forward to that very soon.
Are you still going chronologically?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But I am finding a way to subvert that. much like 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, there are many timelines working in concert. Yeah,
I've invented a way to distort time just so I can keep my my artificial heuristic going while still doing the games that I want.
Well, it's not the games. You know what? Just wait around. When we make the actual launch, there's just so much happening in the world of the network. Where we've got the Ohio Game Developers Expo happening here pretty quick. I don't know, like it's an exciting time.
Damn yeah, it.
Which
well,
is that is freaking rad, dude.
Yeah, what is this? This is the first I've heard of this.
Oh, yeah. We were, so by we, I mean Gary and myself, we were invited to go to the Ohio Game Developers Expo in Columbus, being held at the Kosai Center, to give a talk about Dark Souls and Bloodborne and From Software games in general. So this is going to be kind of like the, kind of the intro to, you know, you know, we can only call ourselves like educated consumers. You know, we're not developers or anything, but an intro to what makes, you know, Dark Souls and its ilk special, and what lessons can be learned and applied to other games.
So have you asked them, can your little hello, my name is Bad say like professional game talk about her?
Professional asshole with a microphone. my business card for DuckFeed just says like operations founder writer or whatever, but I should just be asshole with microphone.
Have microphone will travel.
Have microphone will irritate. So this has been a very long rambly section at the beginning, but there's just so much cool stuff happening. And if you're listening and you're still sticking around, we're so happy to have you along with it. This is a positive time. But in the meantime, today we've just got the normal show. We're gonna do a multiplayer, a very popular multiplayer in fact, and yep. A grind thanks to Jala. But yeah, let's begin with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer to go first?
I have one.
Jala, you were first.
Yay. Okay, so esports coaching paychecks are on the rise. I've dropped a link in for you guys. The prize pools for Dota 2 are now at $18 million, paying out at least $6 million to the champion team for this year's The International. By comparison, the Cricket World Cup has a total prize pool of $10 million, with the winning team, Australia, receiving just under $4 million. So not only did I bring back the esports, I brought back Australia. Yeah. All right. Anyway, in 2014, 205 million people watched or played esports. But by 2017, market researcher Newzoo estimates that that number to climb to 335 million. Hmm. In 2014, the esports industry was worth 194 million, but by a conservative estimate, mind you, will double in size. So by 2017, it's supposed to be about $465 million. Hmm. Esports coaches are reported to earn something in the realm of $50,000 to $60,000 a year, and these are most of the time people who are in their early to mid-20s who, you know, like, have grown up playing games, and they are, you know, currently coaching for these kinds of things. This is just being brought up because we were talking about esports the last couple of times around, and, you know, yeah, like, testing for drugs, and it's really starting, especially now with these numbers coming up, yeah, you know, to be expected. It's really hitting pretty much like any other sport at this point.
Yeah, well, the International is happening like as we speak.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a whole big side of video games and gaming that I just have no insight into other than curiosity. And just kind of a not really like a vested interest, but like it kind of seems like whenever money is involved, discussions of legitimacy are thrown in, no matter how. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's weird that ends up being for my own personal taste.
Well, given the fact that the last time I said a news story, it was about how, you know, the gamer age is rising. There's a whole bunch of older people who are playing games to keep their minds active. Then now you've got games that are being developed more or less specifically to geared towards this kind of esports culture. Yeah. So, I mean, like, these are different branching paths that games are taking. And then, of course, a long time ago, I was talking about, you know, the games that are being used and developed to act as types of treatment for, you know, this or that kind of medical thing and whatnot. So, I mean, like, they're just kind of going all over the place and being applied all over the board for any number of different things at this point. But
it just has to be an age thing, right? I don't know. Like, kind of like how, even though I don't particularly care for Let's Plays or streams, I recognize that eventually we have to do them because video content uber alles. But, like, I don't know. It just, it seems like by the time you turn 16 in this realm, they're issuing your lifetime achievement award and raising your jersey up into the rafters. Like that, like, and then they're going to harvest your carbon to turn it into like diamonds for the next person.
I started watching the Dota 2 international tournament these past 2 days out of curiosity, and that'll be the majority of my grind, because I haven't played anything else essentially. But I'm curious now, as we talk about these coaches, are they allowed in the booths with the teams? Because I know I saw people in the booth that weren't necessarily at a computer. Or are they like separate, and was that just a staff person? Because for a game that is so strategy heavy, I would think a large part of the team dynamic would be kind of being able to plan and execute strategies on the fly versus having someone kind of sitting back as a sixth man and kind of telling everyone what to do.
Actually having a coordinator there to call plays and say, okay, everybody go here and do this, as opposed to relying on each of the five people to arrive at their predetermined roles independently.
Yeah, and I want to say, because some of the interviews I watched, they were asking questions like, hey, who's calling the shots on the team? And it was all people within the team. So I'm wondering when do these coaches kind of step in and step out as regards to the actual play?
I don't know.
That's a good question. I mean, I've seen plenty of, photos and stuff like that of the coaches being behind and just watching, but they're not like actively doing anything while the person is playing, the game. They're just watching. So, I mean, I don't know.
Like, there has to be value in having somebody who can watch these other teams as they perform and say, okay, like, if we get into this situation, here's roughly what they do most of the time. Like, that, that seems like something, valuable that a person with an eye for it, but not necessarily the ability to execute, can add to these operations.
There's a scandal where the coach is stealing the tapes from the other team, and it's like, dude, they were putting it on Twitch.
Like, everybody saw this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's weird that, like, everything is kind of evolving in, and not everything, but this is evolving along the same lines. You know, like, these different roles and stuff are popping up. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, I'm excited. It's not often that you get to watch something like this evolve to the extent that we have.
Yeah, it's to the point where it's obviously going to be like, this can be people's careers. They can do this for a living at this point, especially with the market growing the way it is. So,
yeah. And I'm sure if I step foot in the international, like, just a fucking 12-year-old would push me into a mud puddle and ask me if I can still get erections. Like, it'd just be super emasculating. Dennis, you popped in there with the starting pistol, so why don't you go next?
I'm excited to share the story. I'm not sure if I'm excited about what the story is about. So it was leaked and then confirmed that PlayStation Plus subscribers will soon get to start voting on which PS4 titles go free in their month's lineup. So at least what was leaked specifically so far, there were three titles that you could vote on. And the one with the most votes would be the one that's available. So great in concept or on paper, but in practice, I think that means that if the vote is at all close, there will be more people disappointed and angry about which game is released than there are happy about it. Yeah. Just by virtue of having three titles available.
Well,
go ahead, Joel.
I was going to add that you also have the fact that if you have, the PlayStation Plus and there is a title you've never heard of, but hey, you don't have anything else to play and you try it and then you really like it, that's a really cool discovery. Whereas if you're voting by popularity, none of those titles are ever going to get in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I could also see there being some negative things with popular often is, in direct opposition to good. And, things where, like, if your tastes just don't line up with, whatever turns out to be the majority voting block.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, things like Metrico, which is, people know how much I freaking love that game, or Papa Yo, like games that kind of got critically panned a little bit and that I never ever would have tried unless someone kind of set them on the table in front of me and said, you know, free, take it.
Yeah.
And I worry that that will go, you know, go south, especially now that with the PS4, PlayStation Plus subscription is required to play online. Mm-hmm. That just tells me that whatever has the most name recognition or whatever is the most Call of Duty like is what's going to get picked. And that, I feel like that has high potential to have a lot of wasted potential.
Well, if they just had like a certain number of slots that people could vote on and then they just put whatever random thing in addition to that, then that wouldn't be so bad because that would still give you that, the introductory mix of here's some totally random stuff you would have never seen before, plus the things that are most popular. That would probably be their best bet, but I don't know what exactly they're going to do.
Yeah, I know. I guess I'm also maybe a little biased because they never put anything I'd even play on anyways.
Yeah, and so that's super weird that you would say that, so whatever's going to be most popular is going to suck and be on there, because the PS4 offering on PS Plus, subscriptions is almost always some kind of, small indie kind of thing. So by virtue of saying, hey, something that is kind of like more mass appealing, a little bit more like action focused, like Dennis said, the Call of Duty kind of thing, it seems like the pressure would be to vote for whatever seems like the highest value would be, like, we're a year and a half out from the release of the PS4, maybe a little bit more than that, and we're going to start getting some more AAA games that were originally developed on the PS4 being put out for free as well. And so, like, this kind of seems to me to be like a pressure to, get away from that, which I would rather get something small and indie, but it seems like this pressure would be something that would more benefit what you're looking for, David.
Yeah, I think it would be good for me. I'm just saying more as a whole. I'm not sure.
I love that the mechanic that you've set up is like anti-utilitarian. That the happier everybody else is, the more unhappy you are. I'm not sure. I can't figure it out, man.
maybe one ray of light is the three games that were used as the example in the leak, at least, were Zombie Vikings, Armello, and Grow Home, which two of those three games I've never heard of. And then Grow Home was intriguing, but didn't even know it was on PS4.
Yeah.
So, that feels like a good balance just at first brush. But I don't know if they're going to be able to find that balance every month and then, what that will do. So
see,
I like the spirit behind it. I'm very nervous about the execution.
See, I'm really hoping that Grow Home is the sequel to Gone Home, where you come home from college to discover that your parents have started, growing pot in the backyard.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, no, Grow Home is a very charming game that more people should probably play. And I'd like to see it go free because I don't want to have to boot up my Windows machine to play it. Yeah.
Then cast your vote now.
Text 444444441 to
I think that's the Snappy Tomato pizza number, dude.
What's Snappy Tomato?
It's like the Cincinnati pizza chain, and it's like what? It's like 444411 or something. Huh? No, it's the other Cincinnati pizza chain.
I can't keep up with this.
Not
like
sure pizza
you don't want to. They're all terrible.
Well, La Rosa's hand tossed is fine. Like, so I just had like Skyline, like actual, like according to Hoyle Skyline, like 2 years ago. And I've lived in this city for fucking 9 years. So,
Skyline is amazing.
I'm more of a Gold Star man myself, but that gets you burned at the stake.
Okay. To be fair, I use Skyline as a genericized trademark or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. It's brown sauce on a hot dog.
Yeah, which it's really funny that that's evolving towards, like, I'm trying to think of, like, no one will get this, but, like, sisu in Finland is, like, this licorice treat that is just god-awful, but everyone in Finland loves it and loves to watch other people try and react to it.
Yeah.
See, the difference is that Skyline chili is amazing.
But it's
but you're from Cincinnati. You can't say that.
No, he's not from Cincinnati. He's from where I'm from. And where I'm from, where Cole from. No, it's not all Cincinnati. where Cole from, where I'm from. Chili is a stew that primarily is comprised of ground meat and beans and also large chunks of like tomato and pepper. Like it's
to be
a very,
fair,
it
you
is a
can
very
get
thick...
all that in Skyline Chili if you order a high enough way.
Okay, yeah. So if you do like a 7 or 9 way, then yeah, they're gonna put you know just whatever you want. They'll put gold bullion into it. But if just like get the bog standard Skyline, it is brown water. They push out of a pump directly into your car boat.
To be fair, like a 3-way has beans.
I don't know. I've never been able to figure out the ways. Graters, like, no.
Help him find his way.
Mm. So Graters is a Cincinnati food I can get behind as just a very good ice cream. But Cincinnati chili is just not something I've ever been able to hold any truck with, and it's something that primarily I have ingested through peer pressure.
What about Geta?
Geta is fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, Geta, you pop that on like an egg sandwich with some like an English muffin. That's some good eating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my experience, you never go to a Skyline. You just kind of wind up there, blasted drunk at 2 a.m., and you're like, well, I'm here.
Yeah, you emerge in a Skyline.
You come back from a brownout in a Skyline.
Well, what do you think, you know, Skyline time is?
I don't know.
I have this feeling that basically every person on the podcast, or not on the podcast, listening to the podcast who has never been to Cincinnati is just like, you know, we basically already have a pretty good idea.
Luckily, anyone who has a Kroger's nearby can try Skyline Chili.
Yeah, it's that jar, it's that can in the chili aisle that you stay away from because you have sense.
Also, as a legitimate pro tip, if you were to actually do this, understand that Skyline Chili is not a soup.
Yeah, it is a sauce, which just is very like disorienting and disappointing, and you might as well just like get like Coney sauce because at least that will have flavor.
It's a dignity sauce. You kind of turn in your dignity, you get the sauce.
Jeez, apparently I'm the only one that actually likes this. I'm the sole person supporting their business.
I just said that I like Gold Star, but they actually like it has some texture. It's not just just something that was extruded through a sluice. Right,
never say those words again.
no, it's not just dander gravy, you know, like there's a little bit more to it.
Stop it. More words you should use.
You guys are very passionate about this subject.
So sluice is the other word. I was talking with people about words that sound bad no matter what. Moist was one of them. Sluice is the other.
Sorry, moist sluice?
So this sidebar, this little diversion has generated 4 titles. Do you want to hear them?
That's what we're recording now.
Brown sauce on a hot dog. Dignity sauce. Extruded through a sluice. Dander gravy. So beat that, us.
There's nowhere to go. This is the end of the episode. just read the titles. That's officially what we do at the end of the episode.
Okay, so I'll just edit in the outro music. So
the PlayStation Plus.
So PlayStation Plus. I don't know. We'll see how this turns out, and if we end up getting a bunch of stupid stuff, well, at least it's still free.
Yeah. Well, technically not, but you know that.
I mean, at least as long as I worry for the state of the Vita because of the fact that it got memory hold a little bit. But yeah, as long as there are indie titles that will come out for free on that, I will be fine.
Yeah, I was gonna say that there are good games coming out on the Vita that in PlayStation Plus is a great intro to them.
Yeah. I don't know, that might go into my story, but there was so the composer for Final Fantasy XII, he came out and like in some kind of online posting, this wasn't going to be my story, but might as well, alluded to the idea that there is a Final Fantasy XII remake in the works. So Woo-hoo! This is a game that I have a tremendous amount of fondness for. and this would work very well on a Vita or a similar platform. And Square's kind of newfound affinity for Steam and PC is also, you know, pretty heartwarming as well, because that fits into my life pretty well. I'm kind of bummed out because there really doesn't seem to be anything coming out for the Vita, like in terms of like big mainline games, right? That if this does happen, like it might not land on a form where I can play this, you know, in bed, which is where I would want to play Final Fantasy 12.
Yeah.
So just because this is one of those leaks that is kind of like those LinkedIn leaks where somebody who worked on this puts it on their resume and it gets out to the general press, we know nothing about it. And this composer later kind of recanted on any allusion to the fact that this might be happening. I would not be surprised to see this pop up at Tokyo Game Show sometime in late August or early September. But yeah, this seems to be a thing that is a possibility, and it's something I've wanted for a while.
What broke, what dam broke that suddenly we're getting all of the Final Fantasy remakes?
That's what I was wondering too, and actually how long it has been since 12 was out.
Like, I guess the question that I'm asking is, what got Square's head out of their ass?
when was their last hit?
Well, they've kind of always been making Final Fantasy remakes. How many times was Final Fantasy 4 put out? How many times were Final Fantasy 1 and 2 put out? Like, it's kind of always been a target, and they're roughly like 15 years behind on this. And so, you know, they're putting out like PSN and the Virtual Console were kind of a big score for them, because they can just, you know, take the ROM and put it back out. But any of these kind of updating kind of things. So the Final Fantasy X remake and X-2, those games came out in 2002 and 2004, 2003, accordingly. And they came out just this last year for the PS Vita and PS4 and PS3. So we're looking at roughly 10 years ahead. So like, if Final Fantasy 12 came out on the Vita or PS4 in early 2016, that's roughly on the 10-year anniversary of when Final Fantasy 12 came out. How do you like that math, everybody?
It's the decade.
Yes. It's not some kind of horrible contagion. It is just 10 years and not very hard math to do at all. I'm so sorry. I pretended I was being impressive there.
Well, I mean, Ben's gone. So the level of mathematical ability has dropped by about half.
Oh, man. So I'll be super excited, but this is the barest, scantest hint of a rumor of a thing that might be good. Has anybody else played this game?
Was this the Monkey Boy one?
No, that was Final Fantasy IX, which is also good and also kind of underrated.
Huh.
I've got that in my drawer.
It's great. It's
was this
so good.
The pseudo MMO one?
Pseudo MMO, yes. So this kind of brought in something that a lot of other games would appropriate later on, the tactics system, where you're actually putting in logic. So if a party member is less than 30% health, use a potion or healing spell, etc. So you can program all of your enemies. It's not turn-based. Everything is kind of acted on in real time, and you can switch from character to character, but you are making sure the AI is doing whatever you deem appropriate at given times.
So I spent Dragon Age Origin had a very similar system to that, and I spent so much time on that. I've always wondered if you could make a game fun that used that kind of AI setting up as its main mechanic.
Oh, just like where you're kind of Rainbow Six style looking at the situation and then putting in your commands?
Just like before a battle, essentially think of yourself as a coach, you know, where before the battle you kind of set your AIs, your individual characters, and kind of give them the progressions and the checkdowns of what they should do. And you could, sorry, I've thought about this way too much, but you could kind of have each character have tendencies that you could either kind of spend points or commands or whatever you want to call it to counter those negative tendencies, or you could try to craft strategies around those tendencies that kind of accommodated for their weaknesses or their bad habits.
You're kind of describing the Ogre Battle games a little bit.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Those were great games.
Yeah. Not Ogre Tactics or whatever it is.
Yeah. The real time. Yeah. Cause those ones, it was like where you position your enemies, your characters determines what attacks they have and stuff like that.
And like which units you deploy. Like you have no direct influence over what happens in a given battle, but there's tremendous control pre and post what happens.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Hey, David, how about you? What story you got?
Sure. So apparently Jaeger, after being kicked out of Dead Island 2, has filed for insolvency.
I believe that's European for bankruptcy.
Yeah, I think so. What they said, saying this article, I'm reading the Polygon article, is that it allows Jaeger development itself to... they say, quote, to contain the damage to just Jaeger Productions while protecting the remaining employees and continuing to pay them, end quote.
Yeah.
So I don't exactly get this. So like the alternative is that like the Jaeger developments, you know, enter, you know, like forced, indentured servitude for... you know, Deep Silver. Like, I'm not entirely sure I follow that, but yeah, it does sound like basically bankruptcy.
It sounds like Chapter 11, and just what they're trying to say is we need to protect our assets and our personnel in order to continue maybe having the possibility of generating some kind of income.
Sure.
So that's what it sounds like to me, and just a way to get some kind of debt forgiveness so that they are not just immediately, you know, pillaged for their carbon.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, maybe a little bit going along with some of that theme, they seem to pretty heavily spin this as, you know, very much like creative differences type of thing. And I forget what it said. So, some of it seemed to almost borderline say like we, you know, kind of skipped out on the project because we didn't want to our company to be associated with what the end result is going to be. So that's maybe I'm projecting a little bit of my hatred of Dead Island onto this.
Your noted disdain for this property.
Right, exactly. Which will become ironic in our next segment.
Jesus Christ! I was going to say your noted disdain, despite the fact that you played all of them to completion. David, you were a riddle wrapped in a mystery.
relationship here.
Yeah. So anyways, Jaeger, a studio that I have, you know, fondness for, at least from Spec Ops, I will add as another thing to hate Dead Island for.
that they harmed the people that you like the thing they made?
Yes.
Yeah. Jella, have you played Spec Ops? Is that a thing you hopped up on?
That is something that I have on my backlog.
Oh my gosh. Like, bump it up.
It's sitting there. But
Bump it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, see, the problem is that because my birthday was recent and people have sent me things, many of which were games, I have other games too on my roster to play first because they were more recently given to me.
Okay,
so
all right.
I get
so
to it.
What you're saying is I need to buy you a new copy of this and send it to you.
Yeah, just like bump it to the top, pop the stack. Yeah.
I'm saying that I will get there when I get there.
Okay, no, it's fine.
pro tip, Cole, that's not how stacks work.
I know, I'm just saying that to allude to maybe the loose concept of this, but not the actual. I know how stacks work. FIFO LIFO, man, what up? You all right? I dropped some knowledge on you. I got some science here. I use those, right? Please tell me I did.
Yes, you did.
Okay, cool.
One good or you know at least a good thing is it sounds like they are still developing Dreadnought, which I guess is a flight simulator, so it sounds like
Dreadnought.
I
like Dreadnought, it's cool.
There you go. They are developing a cool flight simulator. So it's nice to see this isn't like, you know, oh well, you know, there goes our revenue for, you know, the foreseeable future or whatever.
which is what, you know, chapter 11, I don't know how insolvency works in Europe, is specifically meant to do. Like, don't just let this keep us from being able to create value.
Right, right.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section, where we ask the community a question and the community answers.
A lot.
This is this is one of those ones where we got way too many responses, so we're probably going to blow through them very quickly. Jalis, since this was your prompt, I'm going to ask you to recapitulate the question that we put to the nice people.
We want to hear your favorite quote from a video game, serious or funny. What stuck with you?
Yeah, so we're talking about video game quotes, and some of these are just quotes, some of them have the proper context, etc. But I will start us out with David Petroka, who writes in saying, Chrono Trigger, or Magus from Chrono Trigger, saying, if history is to change, let it change. If the world is to be destroyed, so be it. If my fate is to die, I must simply laugh. A good lot of quotes from CT, but Magus is badass, so I went with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. Jalis, since you submitted this one before you knew you were going to be on the episode, why don't you read yours?
I'm a one-man cheeseburger apocalypse. Coach from Left 4 Dead 2.
Can you do it as Coach Z from Homestar?
No. I'm a one-man cheeseburger apocalypse, Homestore.
Thank you, David.
There you go.
I'm a one-man cheeseburger apocalypse.
I'm a one-man...
You know, I always loved it that, like, my our colonized high school gym teacher actually kind of spoke like Coach Z.
Well, Coach Z has, like, it's like a North Midwestern style, like, twang to it. He sounds like a like Michael Moore actually has that. It's like a Michigander accent.
I am now going to have to watch one of his documentaries imagining it entirely as Coach Z.
No, I mean, like, I don't think that the people from Michigan say jorb instead of job, but yeah, no.
The Republicans took our jorbs.
Well, no, it's also a little bit of the Fargo thing. Like, well, I gotta disagree with some of your detective work there, Homestar. Yeah. Yeah. let's see here. David, what's Franz say?
Sure. Franz says, in knowing the teachings of Xerthamon, I have become stronger from Planescape Torment. Or any other voice line from... What is the apostrophe in the middle of that even do? Dakan?
Dakan? It doesn't do anything. It would sound
cool.
Yes,
it's fantasy. That's what yeah. You do with fantasy.
Well, no, fantasy is where the surplus Y's and apostrophes go.
Ah, yes.
is he a dark elf?
You know what? I played and loved Planescape Torment. I do not know who Xerthamon is or who Dakan is.
That just seemed like kid. That was always like the thing they did to make a name like Dark Elfy.
Oh, it was also a thing from the Pern games. Jala, who's Dakan?
He's a Gith, don't you know?
He's a what?
Gith.
He's a Gif?
Gith. G-I-A-T-H. Gith.
Oh, Gith. Oh, yes. like a Githraki, like a dweller of the astral plane.
Yes, thing.
Okay, cool.
Githzerai. I believe it's Githzerai is how they call them in the game.
Yeah, Githraki are the lawful ones, and Githzerai are the chaotic ones.
Okay, Githzerai are the ones that you come across all the time. Then,
yeah,
okay.
there was a sectarian split between them on the astral plane.
Yeah, I remember that, but I don't remember which name applies to what. Where I just remember I heard Githzerai quite a bit, and I'm like, I know he's a Gith. I don't know what type of gith, but he's a gith.
No, they excel in psionics, and in fact, they are deemed to have passed down a lot of psionics to humankind through contact with the ash. I swear that I'm not reading, like, Wikipedia. I can send you a screenshot of what I'm looking at right now. Like, in fact, I will do that.
Well, the thing is, I retained, like, all of the story that he was talking about and all that other stuff. Dakan was, like, one of the more memorable characters for me in the game. And obviously a lot of other people, because lots of people like Dakan, and there's more Dakan out there. So, mm-hmm. in the responses, yeah. So
I just find it ironic that the voice actor that apparently was also Assistant Director Skinner from the X-Files gained psionic powers.
No, I literally, I took a screenshot at 10:15, 22 p.m. On this night, and I will share that with everybody to assure you that I have not been looking at Wikipedia.
Put it on the Slack, man.
That is, in fact, that nerdy.
I'll put it in the Slack. It's cool. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Nick say?
Nick says, it's dangerous to go alone.
Take this.
Take this is the name of an awesome nonprofit that tries to raise awareness of depression and anxiety, specifically targeted at people who play games and also people with nerdy pursuits. Frank Cifaldi is involved with it. It's super cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it is a direct reference to this quote?
Yes. It's dangerous to go alone. So take this, gotcha. And, you know, here's all of this, and here are these resources for you.
And once upon a time, I made like a little photo manipulation because I played a little bit of Amnesia many, many moons ago the first time. And then I had a weird dream in which I was playing a game, but I was inside of the mansion thing in Amnesia. And then Gary and Cole were there. I have a post on my blog about it. I'll have to unearth it so I can send it. But I made a little image, and I put, like, it's dangerous to go alone. Take this. And I put Gary Cole in my little waffle that I made for them. So.
That's funny.
And I can confirm no Wikipedia.
Yes, that is in the Slack. Stay tuned for details about the Slack. Let's look here. Glenn writes in saying, I know that this is show crossover, referring to the recent WAF episode about this game, but the last Metroid is in captivity. The galaxy is at peace.
..
I'm sure nothing goes wrong.
Everything is good.
That's what .. means.
Just checking in. No, .. means fart. Every time you read .., it means somebody farted.
Of farts on this thread then.
Jala, what's Gordon say?
Gordon says, Samar Dakan. I may be bested in battle. Thanks. I may be bested in battle, but I shall never be defeated.
I don't think I've seen Gordon respond, so welcome to the fold, Gordon. And if you responded before, I'm so sorry I forgot you. Let's see.
He farted in your general direction.
David, what does Steven say?
Steven says, mine is definitely from what the scholar says to you at the end of Dark Souls 2. There is no path beyond the scope of light, beyond the reach of dark. What could possibly await us? And yet we seek it insatiably. The way these lines are delivered almost makes it seem like poetry, which is disappointing for me because I would attempt to deliver them that way, except that I never played Dark Souls 2. And I'm horrible at those games.
Basically, all lines in that game are poetry.
Yeah, they are written as ways to evoke tone and character more than ways to convey information.
Lawjack was like, sup, yo.
Do they maintain the... the weird, like, everyone has an echoey voice?
Yeah, but that's more through just kind of the environmental processing than anything. Okay. It does a really good job of just kind of, like, capturing the ambient sounds. Like, man, I could write a paper on the ambient sound in Dark Souls.
You will. Someday.
There's an amazing YouTube channel that is just the ambient sound from Dark Souls. They go in and they find a place where there are no enemies, or they kill all the enemies, and they just kind of like zoom in with the binoculars and just take these breathtaking vistas and, you know, scenes of the skyboxes and stuff, along with, like, here's what Ash Lake sounds like, here's what the Great Hollow sounds like, and it's all up there, and this is just like very, very just relaxing stuff to listen to, surprisingly.
I love the skyboxes in Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm. They're great. Let's see here, Dennis, what's Lorcan say?
Lorcan says, let's all work together and try our best. Tifa.
Lessons for us all. Michael Farmer writes in saying, ha! Link, The Legend of Zelda.
See, I you read it differently than I was expecting. That's,
yeah,
that's,
yeah, I was expecting, you know, the sword slashies.
What? Oh, no, this sounds like somebody dying to me.
To me, it was ha, ga, hmm,
no. See, I, oh, wow.
Yeah. Shall we each give our interpretation?
Jala, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Okay, David, go ahead. See, he puts way too many N's and A's into that. Like, I want to prolong that. Like, a series of what appears to be 9 N's, I'm going to put the... Like,
no,
his dying sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like...
That's like a revving up kind of noise.
Yeah. Well, Link is also part car. He's half Hylian, half elf, half car. He is turbo teen.
He has all kinds of halves everywhere.
Legend of Zelda and the Nitro Booster.
To be fair, I thought Link's dying noise was just wee 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 wee.
No, that's Pac-Man.
Wow.
Jala, what does let's see here, what does Omgamoose say?
a bomb.
A bomb.
Okay.
Yeah.
JC Denton. For a more serious answer, basically every quote from developing a new technology or wonder in Alpha Centauri.
Mm.
Love that.
I've not
It's a poor choice for a close range weapon.
I've never played Alpha Centauri, which is a shame on me, right? I can only assume it's like and man lets slip the surly bonds of gravity and glimpse the face of God or something like that, right?
I don't know. Then now you're going to send me to Wikipedia. I'm curious. My curiosity's piqued.
I'm imagining an anthropomorphized gravity who has surly bonds.
Just he's not really happy to be there. Dennis, do so Hosnick, but also note that I'm going to criticize your delivery of these lines.
Okay. Well, I have no reference for that. Oh, no, excuse me. I know Otacon. I can do that one right. I have no reference for the first one, so I'm just going to do it as Sonic. You're pretty good. Yeah?
That's Revolver Ocelot. Okay.
Sure, yeah. And then Snake!
Yeah.
Yo, Otacon was actually like week before last in Baltimore, interestingly enough.
What, Christopher Randolph was there?
No,
I meant more the convention, but you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there we go. Okay. I'm more familiar with the actor who plays Otacon than the actual convention he is named after. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Otacon is one of the, like, that's become the basis of a lot of voices that I do at work. For videos and things like that.
Really?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, because we make videos for a lot of technology oriented things, we need a character who is just kind of like a baseline nerd. And so we kind of talk like this just a little bit. You know, just like a little bit in the higher register. Yeah, that is not my best showing, but there we go.
So there's like 82 different snakes. Are there like 82 different Otacons or?
Well, it's funny that you say that because I just found this out with games that I've played recently. But apparently Otacon's father is somebody who worked with Big Boss.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like Hubert Emmerich or something like that. Humphrey Emmerich.
Yeah. You know, they don't really, you know, play this out real, you know, make it real obvious, but the Metal Gear games take place in an alternate history that, you know, the caste system is still going on.
It takes place in an alternate history where there are 5 people who exist and all of them know each other.
Yes.
It's basically the super world. Sean Petcher writes in saying, pretty sure this is from Hitman. I've never played it, but I had a DM who would take a lot of tracks from OC Remix and incorporate them into his game style. He had this play at the end of a very epic story arc. I'm a killer, and I always have been. They say once you taste blood, it changes you forever. I wouldn't know, because it's been part of my diet since day one. What is worth killing for, you might ask? I wouldn't know. Because I've never had any other choice. I've always followed orders. In taking another man's life, all I can say is that it's both easier and more difficult than you can ever imagine.
Just imagine that set to OC Remix music.
Yeah. Yep. I just did it as Snake. I did it as subdued Snake.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that actually sounds like Snake, but
The question is subdued Snake actually one of the snakes? What the snake continuum?
It's one
little
of the
did you know Otacon is actually Subdued Snake. So.
I'm a killer. I always have been. They say once you taste blood, it changes you forever. I wouldn't know because it's been a part of my diet since day one. What's worth killing for, you might ask? Well, I wouldn't know because I've never had any other choice. I've always followed orders, and taking another man's life, all I can say is that it's both easier and more difficult than you can ever imagine.
Wow.
This is like the best topic ever. Pat myself on the back.
Did you see that?
Other than the poetry reading, I like that too.
They are, but I don't know what to hope for it because I never saw the first one.
I know. I just enjoyed it because at whatever the mall was in Baltimore, there
the Baltimore,
yeah, yeah. Like there, you know, there's a movie theater, and it just so happened that right under the banner for they had hanging up for the new Hitman movie, there happened to be a kiosk, just some random mall kiosk run by like this huge bald dude in a suit, in a black suit and red tie.
And he was giving it his all.
Yeah.
Jella, what does Roop say?
Never pay more than $20 for a computer game. Guybrush.
It's so good.
Right?
Yep. Oh. And like, I played that in like a ROM and Scum VM, but when I got to that, I just laughed out loud.
Mm-hmm.
David, what does Carlo say?
Carlo says, I'd like some pound cake. I have no idea what Ryu sounds like. Ryu from Street Fighter 2.
Now that's what Ryu sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to figure out a way to like 8-bit clip or every word in that, and I'm not sure I could pull that off.
It just sounds like a quote from the worst gay porn movie ever.
But is somebody ordering dessert? Why does that immediately have to be gay?
Well, that just kind of like derails. I was going to just say that the Hadouken from Ryu from Street Fighter 2 is my text noise.
Oh,
so
yeah?
I get fireballed every time I get a text message.
Oh, it's not the tornado kick one, because that's always been my favorite. Like, I don't even know what he's saying, but just the fact that there's so many syllables in that half second. Let's see here, Dennis. What does Joshua say?
You were almost a Jill sandwich. Barry Birch, President Evil.
Perfect. Yep. Perfect.
Awesome.
And then you look like a bear wearing a marshmallow. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, those are awesome.
There are some great lines out there, but my favorites are the ones that make me laugh.
Let's see here. Sam Bear writes, kill. Jack Slate, dead to rights retribution. This is the first line he says in the game. It's a command to his comically huge dog. B-list third-person shooters are amazing. I always...
Oh, and... Go ahead. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, I need to go look at a quote list for Army of Two now.
Yeah, likewise, Eat Lead probably has some good ones.
Daps, I was looking at that earlier, yeah.
Daps, Broheim. I always get Dead to Rights mixed up with The Suffering, which was a third-person shooter that came out roughly around the same time. The PS2 was really weird.
Wasn't The Suffering just kind of made to be like, It was like if you took an edgy reboot without actually having an original.
It was an edgy version of reboot. So you had Enzo, Bob, and yeah, it was really weird. Much better than the reboot game for PlayStation 1. Let's hear Jala. What's Kilo say?
Kilo says, in the FF9 manual, the quote to represent Freya is, "To be forgotten is worse than death." That line changed how I lived much of my young life.
That's a pretty good line.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that Freya was more developed as a character in that game. Both her and Amarant were very memorable to me, but there was just nothing to them compared to like Ico or Garnet. Mm. Yes. And Kilo wrote in to actually kind of let us know how to pronounce their name. So thank you very much for doing that, Kilo. I no longer have to feel like a jackass when I say your name. David, what does Alessio say?
Alessio says, "Excellent speech, my friend. Gift of the silver tongue. They say it's the mark of a good officer. And of a liar. Americans are too in love with the sound of their own voice to speak the truth." I have no idea. Is Revolver Ocelot actually a, like, gun-wielding cat?
No. He is a person from Russia who takes inspiration from the Ocelot because he is a Metal Gear villain who must take after an animal, even though Ocelots primarily do not nest in Russia as it stands.
Nor do they primarily wield revolvers.
Yes, but he does like wielding revolvers because he prefers to smell the smell of carbide and feel the cylinder lubricated and sliding into its chamber. You know, it's very sexual for him.
Just like Ocelots.
Ocelot is the main character of the Metal Gear series. I don't know if you know that, but it is totally true.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, at some point, Ocelot just stops sounding like a word.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a jamais vu is what that is. It's when something stops feeling like you heard it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Who read that? That was you, David, Alessio?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Dennis, what does Christopher say?
Chris says, "One that always makes me chuckle, since it apparently appears in 100% of video games with stealth mechanics and or guards. Who's there? Long silence / four farts. It was just the wind."
Farts four times.
Or a box.
Yeah, it's extra appropriate because it's followed up with "it was just the wind."
Yeah.
But yeah, the guard excuses are pretty great for forgetting about the clear person they saw running through the room.
Yeah, it's particularly bad when it involves someone getting like brutally murdered or someone chucking a grenade or something like that.
Yeah, Arkham Asylum, like when you're crawling around in the grates underneath them after just straight up hospitalizing somebody is, it must have just been a rat. Like that's like Thief One level shit. Come on.
To be fair, in the Batman universe, maybe rats, can jack people up.
Well, it's not Dishonored, David.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, the real question in Dishonored is why they're not more worried.
Allison writes in, "Hey, Allison, I'll let you in on a little secret. When you live in the clouds, you're never very far from a bathroom." Gus from Broken Age. I need to play that game.
Yeah,
that's
really on my list of games I need to play, especially considering it's on every Steam sale.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did. Allison did a Let's Play of Broken Age here,
really?
like one of those few rare commentary-less Let's Plays. I want to watch her and her playthrough, but I also want to play through it myself, so I'm conflicted.
Yeah, I don't think the game was very long, so I mean that does make it a little bit more manageable.
It'd be like a weekend three sitting kind of thing, it seems like.
Yeah.
Jala, what's Amanda say?
Amanda says, "Had to be me. Somebody else might have gotten it wrong. Morden, Mass Effect 3. Morden has so many great lines in ME2 and ME3. That's just one example. Thought the context
Though the
context is important.
Yeah. Man, Morden is my favorite character in that series.
Yeah.
Like, just, when he, when he gives his version of, I'm the very model of a modern major gentleman, except it is modified to be scientist Salarian. Like, it's like, because you're talking to these characters and you're trying to get to learn them, and especially in Mass Effect, it's so far into the future that it might as well be fantasy. But when they start like referencing Gilbert and Sullivan, and that song, and he just like sings it in his crazy alien voice, like, oh my gosh, like it's such an endearing and wonderful scene.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here, David, what does Phil say?
Phil says, "I've got two of them. Zidane from Final Fantasy 9.
Yep. Nine.
You don't need a reason to help people. And Gray Fox from Metal Gear Solid.
Hurt me more.
Sorry.
Okay. Gray Fox from Metal Gear Solid, who says, "We're not tools of the government or anyone else. Fighting was the only thing I was good at, but at least I always fought for what I believed in." I'm now imagining that this as like a much more militant Ayn Rand.
Not far off. Gray Fox is the man. That is spoilers for a game that came out 17 years ago. But 22 years ago. Oh, time is meaningless. 17. There we go. That is the cyborg ninja, and he is the demonstration of what happens when Big Boss's philosophy goes too far. Dennis, what does Gustavo say?
Gustavo warns, first off, kind of spoilers for Splatoon, although I don't think they're too spoilery. This is what a boss says.
Ben isn't here, we can do whatever we want!
Yeah.
Rosebud was a sled, motherfuckers!
But he says, "You can't handle my spicy wasabi beats. Time to drop the C-bass."
That sounds like some fucking Jet Grind radio level shit. That's amazing.
Well, so I'm assuming it's sea bass, maybe?
Yeah,
no?
I assumed it was
Jet Grind. But like, drop the bass, though. Like, drop. Man, my head is hurting. You never say bass, but this is Schrodinger's word.
Huh. Or maybe drop the sea bass.
But
I'm not sure it's actually pronounced in the game.
I don't know. Huh. Let us know, because I think we fucked that up.
And then he's just going to say, he's just going to reply, "You just need to play Splatoon."
Yeah. Well, yeah, we probably ought to.
Best Buy. I went yesterday and they were out of their bundle pack with Splatoon. So.
Oh man, like any single electronics retailer. I left my power adapter at work yesterday. And so I was like, okay, well, fuck. It's locked in the building. I can't get in. So I need to go find some way to do this. No electronics retailer within like 10 miles of where I live had an accurate listing for something that would let me charge my computer, or at least make it not completely blink out while I was recording Three Abject Sufferings. Like, hey, be better at your job so I can do my fucking job.
not to blatantly spoiler what I'm about to be talking about for the grind, but this week Dying Light was on sale at GameStop. The problem being,
well, there's
that,
your first
that,
mistake.
Well, yeah, the problem being that meant it was actually cheaper new than it was used. And so, like, I was going into all these GameStops, and they, like, would have it used. But it's like, no, I'm not spending that much for a used game. Give me the new one.
It was always so funny when that happened, because we were still pushed to sell the used one, even if the new one was cheaper, because it would have a higher unit per sale price.
Sure.
Oh, man. So finally here we have two. I'm going to do one real quick. This is Graham Markison. "I'm sorry that I've missed your past couple of responses, because I haven't checked the level email, and you primarily do this through that." But Graham writes in saying, "She was a true patriot, Metal Gear Solid 3. But moving on from that to Jonathan Kufus, who writes in saying, "So hard to choose one, but the one that struck me most recently is You Live by Default, Trail Shadow, and Winter Voices. Winter Voices is an odd little RPG where your enemies are mostly shadows from your past, and instead of defeating them, you are mostly just running from them." And he agrees, this is a great topic. So kudos, Jala. This was very fertile ground.
Yay!
Yeah. So let's go through our favorite quotes here. Dennis, did you arrive at one? I know you were having some trouble.
I did, yeah. So it's not so much a quote as it is a sound. And I posted a link to it in the Slack. But the one of the bosses from Rayman Origins, the level is called To Bubble Eyes a Mockingbird. It's this giant, like, fat bird that you have to fight. And when you wake it up, it just, like, gets this crazy look on its face and just goes, and flies off the screen. For whatever reason, like, we were playing the game, it did that, and then Jen and I turned to each other at the exact same time and just went, "Whoa!" And ever since, just randomly, one of us will turn to the other and just go, "Whoa!" And it makes no sense, and it's hilarious. But it is easily the most used video game quote that I have.
Yeah.
Also, the first video game quote for, that Luke has said.
He's going to fit in this family.
Just by default as a vocalization. Jella, how about you?
I already said mine.
Oh, you did?
Way long ago.
So far in the past, it was the future.
Yeah, exactly.
No, remind me. I forget what it was.
You just want to hear it again. That's what it is.
I suppose.
I'm a one-man cheeseburger.
Oh, you did? Wow, that was a long time ago.
Huh. Yeah, I'm telling you, like, you know, an hour ago or something at this point.
Probably not an hour ago, maybe like 20 minutes ago. That's still a long time to expect me to remember. Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I think my favorite is one of Sir Hamlock's lines where... You know,
from Borderlands 2.
Yeah, where, you know, would you like to do battle with a midget riding piggyback on Bullymong? If the answer is no, you are sad. I have no desire to speak to you further. Just in general, I like that. Also, I feel like that actually kind of defines a lot of situations for me. In terms of, like, for example, you know, I'm really into martial arts, and... you know, like, one of the things is, you know, the whole Bruce Lee quote, like, you know, boards don't punch back for, like, being anti-breaking boards. And my feeling on that is, like, but would you like to learn how to break boards with your bare hand? If the answer is no, you are sad. I have no desire to speak with you further. Like,
yeah, it's like, it's a shibboleth, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. Let's see here. I'll go ahead and throw in mine. I'm going to throw in one. I can't attribute it because I just did a frantic Google search. This just happens to be one of those Dark Souls-esque mimetic quotes, but we must have eyes on the inside, referring to some of the plot stuff from Bloodborne, but the lines of Bergenworth and the Healing Church, but. Backing away from that to something a little bit more scrutable, when Colonel Campbell in Metal Gear Solid 2 says, "I hear it's amazing when the famous purple-stuffed worm in Flapjaw Space with the tuning fork does the raw blink on a Harakiri rock. I need scissors 61.
Wait, what?
So, yes, exactly. I'm kind of sad that this became kind of like a meme because of how like low random cheese monkey it is. But when this line is dropped and Metal Gear Solid 2, even though stuff seemed kind of hinky up to that point, like this is the most bizarre, nonsensical, but also like resonant line they could have, you know, put in there to say things are not as they seem.
So I was about to ask, does it actually make sense in context, or is it a clue that, like, hey, you're losing your mind or whatever?
It doesn't make sense in context, and that's why, in context rather, and that's why it matters.
Huh.
Yep. So, yeah. Yeah. Great topic, Jala. Thank you.
Yay.
Yeah. So if you would like to respond to these as they happen, tune in to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast in order to see them as they go up, usually on Tuesday afternoons. And thank you so much for everybody who has participated.
The Grind.
It is now time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing for the last period of time. David, since you were not here last week, why don't you elucidate us as to what you have been occupying your time with?
Sure. I had a couple of things, but I've been really busy. I just came back from Baltimore with work, and then my cousin had a wedding in Chicago. So this has sort of been, you know, me running all over the place. So I have... a couple of games, but none of them have I played very deeply.
Okay.
So I got Hammerwatch on Steam, which in effect, like the overall feel to me, I would kind of describe as being like a roguelike except without permadeath.
Hmm.
Which I realize is sort of a contradiction, but yeah, the gameplay is sort of like a top down kind of gauntlet style I've heard compared to RPG.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different classes, big focus on multiplayer.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I haven't gotten a chance to do co-op with it yet, so I can't really comment. But it seems pretty cool.
We'll be co-oping that soon. Thank you, David.
No problem. other big thing, and I actually just got this evening, so I've been playing around with it some, is Dying Light, as I alluded to.
So this is parkour Dead Island?
Exactly.
Dead Rooftop.
So I think, on the plus side for, hopefully this will be better, I think the opening monologue has more storyline than the entirety of Dead Island. So that's definitely a plus. And then, I don't know, literally I've played like an hour or two of it. I'm still in like the kind of run of tutorial missions, so I can't say a lot about it. The parkour system seems like a really cool accessory to the gameplay so far, although it seems like it could really use a drop down button or whatever, because there doesn't seem to be any easy way if you're on a roof and you want to get to say a balcony below. There doesn't seem to be any way to do that. Well, any good way. You basically, as it is now, you have to drop, and then when you're passing the balcony, press the grab button.
Yeah.
The other thing I've noticed is that at least starting out, your combat, you're incredibly, incredibly weak, which I think is somewhat... probably a good thing. Is probably meant to, emphasize the parkour element. But yep. On the other hand, when it takes like 20 kicks to kill someone, that seems a little bit excessive.
Okay.
So, another thing I really like is if you watch any of the TVs in the game, they display these adorable public service announcements from the... kind of the game stand-in for like the CDC. So it's like they're all like these still image public service announcements on like how to survive a zombie apocalypse, and they've got this little adorable like elephant wearing a hoodie mascot that's kind of a similar effect to like Pip-Boy.
Okay.
He
exists solely for them to put him in catastrophic situations.
Yes, exactly. and then there's also like a number of them have blurbs talking about how like legally the infected are still considered human and therefore have all the legal rights that any citizen does, and there's just some neat elements. So far that seems promising. They still have the incredibly awful motion blur, and unfortunately, since it's a PlayStation, there's no way to turn it off. So I don't understand that. It's the point where like just looking around quickly will cause motion blur.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So.
Does like motion blur so bad that it looks like LCD refresh rate stuff?
It's a combination of it's what it's meant to replicate is the fact that in real life, if you like turn your head like 90 degrees to look to your side, you don't see any of the stuff in between those two points really. It's all just a blur.
Right.
And so it kind of does get that effect. But the other effect of all the motion blur to me is that I kind of end up like just playing the game or most of the action segments just with my eyes unfocused.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's something that was in the original Dead Island games. It's actually much worse in Dead Island. They did seem to have toned it down some, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sucks when they're obfuscating information from you and like by blurring the intermediate frames in your motion. It is definitely keeping you from seeing everything that you ought to see, right? For the purpose of some kind of misguided verisimilitude.
Right. And I'm not saying to bash on Dead Island. I'm more saying to talk about what I'm worried might be in this game. Like, one of the things in Dead Island is eventually one of the really important abilities is the basically the ability to curb stomp enemies you've knocked down.
Okay.
But the problem is the animation for it is like, you know, you're like, you know, rearing back and like throwing your entire body, you know, body weight into it, and then, you know, rising back up to your regular standing, you know, in a fairly short period of time.
Right.
And the game's entirely in first person.
Okay.
So basically, as soon as you activate that ability, your camera just starts swinging back and forth across the screen.
Hmm. You played Mirror's Edge, right?
I did not, actually.
Okay. So, like that's my best kind of comparison for how to handle kind of just, let's say, first-person orienteering, even though that game did make me motion sick to a certain extent. So this is a dead end of conversation because you have no point of reference.
Yeah, well I did watch Dennis play it.
Okay.
From what I've seen, I think there's a lot of similarity. For one thing, I get the idea that I think the parkour system has some similarities in that it's one where, you know, you have to button push to do each the do the various parkour moves, as opposed to there being any sort of like parkour button plus analog stick.
Okay.
The way like Assassin's Creed or Brink does it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, they do the thing where they do animate like your arms and legs. And they do the thing where, you know, they put a heads up display dot right in the middle of your screen to allow you to orient it.
Okay.
So they do some things. The arms and legs things does a little bit annoy me from a story standpoint, just because you start out like dressed in sort of like this low key tactical gear. So like, looks like, you know, like a denim jacket and like some you know, canvas fingerless gloves and
a drummer.
Yes. Yes. Stuff like that. And then like early on the character's like, oh no, you need to get some clothes that are appropriate for parkour, and then you end up in like a t-shirt. It's like, no, this is totally less practical for parkour.
Yeah.
or you know, being attacked by zombies.
Let's hit up a J. Crew internet and an Ed Hardy. Huh.
So far it seems like a legit game. This is going to sound like kind of a condemnation by faint praise or whatever.
Damnation by faint praise, but go ahead.
Yeah. It seems like they're at least trying.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so is the combat good? Because I remember the combat in Dead Island being super frustrating, at least as far as, like, I am swinging a pipe, but I'm only hitting what the crosshair is on, not anything that's in the path of the melee weapon as it swings.
I don't know, just because that's actually one of the apparently few problems I didn't have with Dead Island.
Oh, wow.
Like, that was never really an issue for me.
Huh.
Were you playing on PC?
No, I was playing on 360, but just, like, if I'm swinging something, I should hit shit in an arc. I shouldn't just be, like, laser-focusing my pipe on something that is directly at this one pixel in front of me.
Yeah, I know. Maybe some of it is just, you know, with you know, mouse being an easier pointing device, maybe I just, you know, tended to, you know, aim direct, you know, very directly at something and just never noticed.
But even,
you know, never tried to use that strategy, so.
But
maybe
even still, like,
got lucky.
Like a zombie combat thing, like it's like crowd control. So you'd expect, like, swinging a larger implement shouldn't just do more damage. It should let you affect a wider arc in front of you.
Sure. No. I suppose that makes sense. For what it's worth, I know they have, like, the ability to get a whirlwind attack this time around.
Okay.
So at least there is some ability for that.
And can you shoot beams out of your blade when you're at full health?
Yes. Yes,
okay, cool.
You can.
All right. That's all I needed.
You know, these games in general have always had kind of a weird relationship with realism.
Okay.
In that, like, particularly like Dead Island really wanted to be a gritty, you know, a gritty zombie game. And, like, overall, the storyline itself was fairly serious. But then you get, like, all these bizarre super science weapons where, like, you hook up, like, a car battery, some laptop parts, and some wires to your club. And when you hit someone, it, like, throws them 30 feet with, like, you know, Star Trek force. So yeah, that's apparently still in, although I haven't seen it yet. I don't know, like, my overall feel right now is your weapons just don't seem to do enough damage.
Right. Well, so, they're expecting to avoid conflict more than deal with it.
Right.
Much like my life.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think it kind of, I'm assuming it will ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, like, it's got, like, a skill tree and shit, right? Like, you're able to, like, allocate points to kind of complement your style of play.
Right, and also, like, you know, right now I'm using, like, lead pipes and, like, the what do they call them, the poster on, like, a four-poster bed or some whatever.
Yeah, like your doorknob, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm just using, like, random stuff as weapons where eventually you get, like, you know, legitimate clubs and, you know, katanas and crap like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, overall good. I like the fact that they set it in a town that was hosting basically the Olympics as a justification for why there's all these people that are in shape enough to do parkour. Because according to the game, you won't last 5 minutes with in the zombie apocalypse if you can't do a muscle up, which given how I performed in the open, it would be a bad news for me.
Finally, the Olympic Village will do more than just fucking spread STDs. Man, people getting all up ends up in that place. Huh.
All they do is train otherwise, so.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you know, spreading diseases, that actually is one other thing I...
Okay, finish that sentence for me, please.
One of the things I do like about the game is, you know, this is very much a game where it's the zombies are infected people, they're not dead, and so I like the fact that you can poison them. That's something that always annoyed me in, like, some of the Resident Evil games, where it's like, we're going to have realistic zombies, except they're not going to be realistic at all.
Well, realistic as you can be with a fictional construct.
But I mean, still, if you have a creature that's not not animated by magic, they have to follow the basic laws of biology.
Hmm. Well, also, Chris punches boulders.
I think that all three of us have expressed skepticism, David.
And if Chris is not one to punch a boulder, he is sad.
Dell, 4-4-4-4-4-4-2.
Well, he has many problems, and I don't want to talk to him for other reasons, at least by the time of Resident Evil 6, but we don't need to go there.
See, but in Resident Evil 6, he gets gets overtaken by, oh, what's his name, who punches bosses?
Alcohol?
You don't understand, I lost my men.
And he totally has a pimp chain. What's up with the pimp chain?
My entire crew, they were killed in the Umbrella Raid by Tricell, and blah. Here's this beautiful young man to help lure me out of my darkness.
As a side note, like, is like comprehensive amnesia a possible effective PTSD?
I don't know, man.
I'm not skilled in the ways of PTSD knowledge.
You know what? Reality is what you wish it to be. I'm not going to limit your dreams, okay, David?
Okay.
Anything more about Dying Light?
No. I guess the last thing I played is, and this was very, very briefly, I picked up Leviathan, Last Day of the Decade.
Yeah.
Yay.
So far, it seems pretty good. My character apparently needs to learn how to freaking fight.
Yeah.
And why you would ever initiate a fight by punching someone in the face, I don't know. But, I don't know, like, so far I really like the art style. I really like the way they kind of do. I don't know, I'm assuming, like, it seems like something I've seen before, like it's, you know, kind of meant to be, you know, a reference to some artist or something like that. I'm not sure. But, like, overall, I like the way they take, like, kind of, kind of the cherubim type of look and use that to create Uncanny Valley. And then, so far the storyline seems interesting. They definitely don't waste any time in letting you know that it's going to be one that's like going to do some some social issues, you know, some elements of that, considering like literally the fifth line of the game is, why are you always protecting him? Don't you know he's a queer? So it's,
yeah, and that's because like at that point the bullies are talking about your best friend. You know, the character that I had mentioned before when I had brought up the game originally, and that's actually, at least from my perspective, because it, like I said before, it's a Russian developer, and that culture is pretty intolerant of your sexual preference. Sure. I think it's more a reference to that and having to deal with that, because your character is not like that. It's right, the bullies right. that are also talking mess about you, like, to some crazy degrees. That's... You know, so
right, exactly, yeah. That definitely seems, you know, kind of what they're going for with that. So, I mean, I think that you know, that could be an interesting thing. I'm not so much sure. It seems like they're going to make like the aristocracy thing be a thing, and I've never really I've never really gone in for like the Downton Abbey or Downtown Abbey or wherever we're keeping our monks. Just in general, I'm not sure I care about that. But we'll see.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, go on.
Well, if I could just interject, the because you weren't on the episode where I was talking about it, so. The aristocracy, there's a reason why they're separate from the other people, that like the commoners and whatever, the mudbloods is what they call them. It's because basically the decade, the plague that comes every, that comes and then stays for 10 years when it shows up, the aristocracy is totally immune to it because of a covenant that they had formed with like the Plague King, which is where that disease comes from. So that's why they're separated anyway, which it makes sense, like in the storyline, why that's a thing. But it doesn't really come up to with any great degree after like the beginning when they're telling you about it. At least, as I've seen.
Mention that. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because they do mention it early on, but
Yeah, they do give you more detail on the backstory as to why there are aristocrats in this, you know, kind of stratification of society. But that's, you haven't gotten to that part yet, so.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So both of those seem like they could be some, you know, some interesting story beats to explore. The other thing I really kind of like is that it's steampunk cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I know, speculative future history.
Steampunk.
The history of the future that never was.
But maybe will be.
No, though, so like, yeah, so it's, you know, it seems to be set in some sort of like, I don't know, Elizabethan or, you know, some sort of pasty time, old timey thing.
It feels like something that I don't have reference for.
Sure.
No, I just wanted to come in and drop a bomb on your line of thought. So go ahead and continue.
Okay, fair enough. It seems like, you know, it appears to be set in like old timey times, and it's you know, it seems to have some steampunk elements, but at the same time, like, you have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, this is very, very much. I have no idea where the going for the with this, but I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, and the thing is, you do get more explanation about, you know, like, and the thing is the way that they kind of explain where the tech goes from, they don't explain it directly. It's indirect. You have to gather it from stuff that you're observing in the environment and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, especially, like, it starts falling into place really strongly during one particular section of episode 4, which is way farther away from where you're at, but yeah, like, once you see that one particular setting, then you're like, oh, suddenly I understand now why all of this tech is here. Wow. Right. Cool. So
the other thing I kind of like is the very bizarre and like pseudo direct, or like indirectly direct, way they introduce the, occult elements, which is like, you start out with basically like a Ouija board type thing in your inventory that your father gave you so you could become a sorcerer, apparently. And you're like walking home and you're like, man, this thing is heavy. But I hope my mom doesn't find out. How would I ever explain to her that, you know, the ritual and why I have a severed head in my bag?
Yeah.
And like, then they just go on.
And when you get a little bit further in, I'm really interested to see what your reaction is after he tries his ritual and stuff, because that'll be fun for me to hear what your response is to that. It's unique, I'll say that.
Yeah, but like the whole thing, like I feel like that seems to be that seems to be, you know every storyteller, you know, has their style. It seems like one of the big like stylistic things I'm at least early on seeming to see is just their kind of way of, you know, being very direct in, you know, dropping various plot points and particularly various weird plot points, but at the same time providing no context or explanation and using that to at the same time be fairly indirect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty excited about this.
I'm glad. I'm glad that you're playing it. Yay! Makes me happy.
Cool. Let's see here, Jala. What have you been playing?
Okay, I got lots of stuff. Okay, so first thing I did was I 100%ed Her Story. So I'm not going to talk a whole hell of a lot about it because you've already done that, but I will say a few things. The manner in which that you engage with the database that you're searching in order to uncover the story is basically how my brain works. I put that in a tweet at one point. You see the thing that's in front of you. You pick up on some keyword or concept that catches your attention, and then you wander off somewhere and see where it leads, and then lather, rinse, repeat. Eventually, after enough tangents, you do get back to the original point, far more enriched than when you left, but you just kind of meander off somewhere without any real direction. You're just making your own direction as you go.
Yeah.
And I like the that the story is so indirectly told, but requires you to actively pursue it. However, it does get tedious after enough videos in a row, and I found, because of how I particularly do stuff, having enough repetition, and I need to do something else, anything else, I don't care what it is, just not that, you know? Like, give me variations. So, being me, I get bored with it, but that's just because I'm, you know, the way that I am. So, I had to stop and then come back to it at another time, because I was like, okay, session over. I need to a break from this particular activity. So even if it's interesting, even if what I'm uncovering is interesting, because it was, I still needed to stop just because it's just too much repetition of the same thing.
So that's my question for you. Like, when I saw that you 100%ed it, like, that doesn't seem necessary to me. Like, once you kind of formed your operating hypothesis for this, like,
I got the message long before I got all the rest of the videos, but you have to understand, though, that, like, another thing that I do, though, is that, like, if I'm doing something and I'm interested enough in it, because although I didn't really like, you know, like, I needed to get up and take breaks from it. It's not that I didn't like it. I just needed to take breaks. Although that was the case, I was interested enough because the subject matter was something that is, you know, something that I've harbored interest in, you know, for other reasons, because of, you know, independent projects I'm, you know, got boiling in my brain. And so you fail to understand how thorough I get, Cole, when I do things.
Right. But so, I
even played the game in the recycle bin, which I didn't even understand. Like, I there was a game in the recycling bin on the desktop, and I went in there, I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I had to try to figure out what the hell it was and how to play it, so.
But at what point does that thoroughness become detrimental to your experience of the entire thing? At what point did you stop, adding value to this pursuit?
Here's the problem. I would have not been satisfied without actually seeing everything.
Okay.
In this particular setup, with the way that this game is and how it's indirectly told, I would feel like, okay, at some point, there's got to be something else in there that I'm missing that, you know, may further enrich this even more, because you never know when just like a couple of lines make all the difference to your understanding of a thing. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, I continued on and was like, you know what? In for a penny, in for a pound. I'm already in the middle of playing this thing. I'm going to, you know, see everything, damn it.
Okay. So
I did.
It's funny because, like, I got to what I consider to be the truth of this game at about 50% of the database explored.
Yeah, so did I. But right? I was like, I want to know more about this thing that she mentioned over here. Is there anything else about this? And, okay, what about this? And so I kept... That's how my brain works, Cole.
No, I understand that, but I did the same thing up to about 75%, because at that point I had no further line of inquiry to pursue, and I was taking copious notes, like mind maps and webs and shit.
Oh no, I didn't do all that. I just like put random words like in a non-specific order on a piece of paper, and then crossed them off as I searched them.
Jella, that sounds like a death march.
She's not disagreeing with you.
I know. Okay. Cool.
It might be a death march. Well,
what I'm saying is, at what point did the returns diminish?
I don't know.
Because so much of the story that this game presents to you kind of seems to be a bunch of like marginally redundant things to say roughly the same thing to you, depending on which angle you arrive at it at.
You also forget that I'm also very interested in people as a general rule. And so to observe her doing whatever it is and seeing even just small responses to the lie detector test 50 times or whatever, you know, like that is still interesting to me to see. If it's only like a couple of seconds, okay, great. Well, then I've seen it. I can move on.
I don't know. I guess I sense.
Don't argue with me about my brain.
No, I'm not arguing with you about your preferences, but like, you know, just to, like the overall opinion that you come away from this with. There's a scenario where somebody could say, I 100%ed this, and boy, did it suck. And if you stopped at 50%, it probably would have felt really good.
Oh, no. Like, if I had, okay. before 50%, before 25%, I was like, okay, I need to do something else now. So it's not about like, okay, now that I've gotten to the conclusion, I am satisfied. No, like, I want to see everything. I want to feel like I've gotten everything I can get out of this game. So I'm going to keep going until it is done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm not a perfectionist completionist about a lot of things, but in certain things like stories or things that I'm trying to find information, or particularly this kind of a subject matter, if it wasn't the particular subject, like if the reality, the end result, the situation, the point, you know, of this game wasn't what it was, I would not have stayed for all of it. I would have been like, okay, got it, cool, and then uninstalled it, moved on. But because of the subject matter, I was excessively interested in seeing more of what the character is doing and how she's acting and da-da-da.
Yeah.
So that is the reason why. It is my particular interest in people and my pragmatism when it comes to just, you know, wanting to absorb all of that and whatever. So,
okay. Yeah. The only reason I'm grilling you about this is because it does seem extreme. And I'm just trying to get at the motivation behind it.
I 100% had hot to full boyfriend. I would also consider that extreme. I didn't really need to, but I did.
Yeah.
You know, like visual novels and stuff like that.
All the birds.
Yes. All of them. Okay. Mm. So anyway, like, yeah, like I did 18 out of 24 endings for Bionic Heart that I really didn't need to get that many endings. I could have been satisfied with, like, you know, two. You know, but like I didn't even get all of them because I was like, nope, I'm done. But you know, this particular one, no, I wanted 100% it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
What else have you been playing?
Other things I've been playing. I played Juniper's Knot. Well, I don't know if it's really called playing. Let me explain. It is a visual novel, but it has no choices to make. It's classified on Wikipedia as a kinetic visual novel, but it is listed on iOS under the games category. So that is why I thought it was a game, and I downloaded it and played it. It's free.
It's a motion comic, then.
It's not a motion comic because it's got talk bubbles and the little character sprites as if it were a visual novel, but there's no choices to make.
So no paths, no nothing.
Nope, nothing. So, but the story is actually, it's nice, it's fun, it's quick, it's a free game or novel or whatever you want to classify it as. Then again, Dear Esther doesn't have any choices either. You just absorb it and walk. That's all you're doing.
Sure.
So, you know, it's the same kind of thing here. So but I'm like, okay, if we can say Dear Esther is game-like, then this is also game-like. Whatever. I'm moving on. Okay. I'm not going to argue whether it's a game. Stop arguing, Cole.
No, I'm not arguing. I just wonder, like, something that is literally a sequence of images and words versus an environment that is put in front of you and your choice to engage it and the level of detail in which you, you know, choose to pay attention.
But it's set up the same way that a visual novel's setup is, where it's got the characters talking and reacting to each other with the talk bubbles that you have to push the button to make it go forward, and then the scene changes and whatever. It looks like it was made in a visual novel game making engine.
I've recently been told that everything I think is a visual novel is just a Japanese adventure game, and I am not I am not a purist senpai, so my opinion of this is thus completely degraded. So
okay, continue. Well, anyway, I'm just going to talk about the actual thing now.
Okay.
So the story opens with a boy who has run away from home and lost his way, stumbling along and eventually coming across an imprisoned fiend, and it focuses most significantly on the interaction between these two characters and the stories that they tell to one another about their past, because the boy doesn't know where he is or how to get back home or whatever, and then the fiend is trapped and can't get anywhere anyway, so he just decides to just stay there and they just start talking. And they use their wit and their memory to help each other overcome their respective obstacles. It's a little slow to start, but it gets more interesting as they continue interacting, because then you start to get into particularly the fiend's head and see what she's thinking and, you know, reacting with as everything progresses. I can't really say much more about the story because it is pretty short, but I will still say that I do recommend it. It is interesting, and it's better than some of the gamier visual novel-y adventure, whatever the hell, games that I've played lately. Mm-hmm. So it has nice art. It's free on iOS, and it's cool. So that's another thing I've done.
Cool.
I will skip one of them because there's, like, I have only played a little bit, but I will talk about the thing I am more excited about this week, which is Abyss Odyssey.
It's so good.
Yay! Somebody else is on my side. Hooray! Okay. It's created by a Chilean developer.
Okay.
Yes, my side. You're on the other side of the fence there you play it. Until you play it, yes. Okay.
Until you play it, you are not in the club.
Exactly. Okay, so it's created by Chilean developer Ace Team and published by Atlas for Steam, Xbox 360, PS3, and PS4. Ace also created Xenoclash and its sequel. Abyss has won several different awards and has overall received positive reviews, though there is some critique of certain gameplay issues, which I'll talk about in a little bit. It's a two-dimensional, side-scrolling, roguelike action-adventure game that can be played solo, but is best balanced for two-player co-op. I've played two separate games with Micah Wheeler and Tanner Wolf, two different listeners, putting in about 7 hours so far with more time planned, and apparently David and I are going to be playing. there are online and local co-op modes, training, versus, and PvP modes. There's also a nightmare difficulty available. The developer describes it as Street Fighter meets Super Smash Brothers. Polygon describes it as a roguelike platformer brawler fighting game, as it borrows elements from several different genres. It can sound like it that can sometimes be kind of worrying if you just borrow a little bit from a bunch of different sources. But in this game's case, although it's rough right when you first start playing, before you have special moves, it does smooth out once you unlock a few moves. And that doesn't take very long, particularly if you're playing with somebody, because it's easier to get through that first rough patch.
That's what you mean when you say that it's balanced for co-op at the start.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It really is, because once you unlock a few, because it's the one of the, I'll talk more about it in a little bit when I get there, but one of the downfalls about the gameplay is that because it's meant for you to have all of these different moves and then tailor, you can put like bonus stats on all of your different moves depending upon your particular play style. Although that is like how it plays, and it plays well that way, it does not play so well when you don't have those moves, at least in your repertoire somewhere. So because of that, right at the beginning, until you hit like level 4 or 5 and start unlocking more moves, it's pretty tough because you're trying to get accustomed to the controls and how it plays kind of brawler Street Fighter-y. Then you're also don't have all of the moves available to you. So if you're trying to solo it right in the first little tidbit, it's doable, but it's rough. So I would say anybody who starts it and goes, oh God, give it a little bit of time, like get to like level 4 or 5 and then it'll get better.
Yeah, definitely.
So of note are the aesthetics, which are based on, to a certain degree, on Art Nouveau. Since I love Alphonse Mucha, which is a prominent Nouveau artist, it's no wonder that I like how it looks. It's not just the character stills and the menu art either. It's the entire game is really gorgeous. So, the story. In the year 1890, a warlock sleeps below the earth in the titular abyss below Santiago, Chile. His dreams have begun seeping into reality, and the town is besieged by nightmare creatures emerging from the tunnels leading down into the abyss. The only way to stop the invasion is to travel downward and kill the warlock. You begin by playing Catrienne, who is a mysterious woman who has ties to the warlock and is on a mission to destroy him. She says she is just another of the warlock's dreams. There are two other main characters that you can unlock as you continue to play the game, and all of the individual main characters level up independently depending upon how much you play them. The game focuses predominantly on the play itself, but there are deeper story beats hidden away as optional unlockables for the Lorehounds. So it does have lore in it as well. Just it does focus a lot more on the gameplay. So about the gameplay, every character you see in the game has fighting mechanics that are distinct, from the soldiers protecting the town to each monster to wandering shopkeeper guy who looks like the merchant from Resi 4. each enemy encounter feels like a cross between a fighting game and a brawler, with rewards for timing blocks and attacks properly. After beating an enemy, you capture their soul and you make it available to play as that creature. What happens is you can either earn via combat or pick up in the shop. Sometimes the shopkeeper will sell you like the soul of a creature that you can use and switch, toggle between. So you have two different life bars and two different play styles. So you play as Catrienne or the Ghost Monk, which is my personal favorite.
Yeah, that's why I play as.
Yeah, I love the Ghost Monk. Anyway, and then there's another guy that I haven't unlocked yet. But once you are killed and as this main character, a soldier from the surface jumps in to grab your items and find a res point. This isn't an AI guy. This is you. You get to play as the soldier, and you have to go find a shrine to get Catrienne or the Ghost Monk or whoever back. This effectively means that you start out with two lives, each with its own playstyle. The soldier also gains levels and moves as your complementary main character gets them. Like, there's a particular soldier that helps out Catrienne, another one that helps out the Ghost Monk, and so on. So this is
something that's kind of repeatable. Like, you'll die multiple times and have the soldier jump in multiple times.
Yeah, yeah. And you can, like, if you res Catrienne or the Ghost Monk or whoever, and then you die again, then you can be the soldier again. And if you get to another res point, you can bring your main character back again and keep going down further.
Sure. And that's actually...
Go ahead.
That's actually one of the main strategies is basically, you'll have a situation where you have, your main character, the soldier, the soul you've captured, and then you can also then be building up mana in order to be ready to capture another soul once you run out of health on the one you've already captured. So a lot of the gameplay, at least when soloing and trying to get through the level, is juggling these multiple health bars. And so, basically using them as, almost like consumables to be able to make it through the levels.
Mm-hmm. And all of the levels are procedurally generated, so the maps are never the same, like the difficulty levels and everything. They're all different every time. The overall Abyss map leads downward from three different points in areas around Chile through a series of levels that are classified as easy, moderate, and hard. There are also several question mark rooms where you play as, like, you get to play as an enemy character, and if you beat everything in that room without dying, you actually get to, capture the soul of that enemy and use it in the next level that comes after that and thereafter. There's also a single golden treasure room that doesn't only just contain like a ton of loot, but there's also like some kind of a fountain that you can throw money into. And I don't know what it does, but there's a soldier guy next to it who says that the effects take time or something like that, but a wish will be granted or something. I don't know. I got to that treasure room, and then I got to like the warlock when I was playing with Tanner, and then we died, and then I never found out what the room did. In my playthrough that time, the loot room was right above where the warlock was. There are boss rooms where at the end of the level you fight shadow forms of yourself or bigger, meaner, nastier bosses. Those usually give you new moves if you don't have all of them, or they give you weapons or items as presents. Some of the walls in the levels are breakable, and some paths require certain types of weapons like ice weapons or fire weapons to get to. Another feature is that you can buy camp tokens to set up at res points, which not only give you a save spot to load from if you die further down, but also grant you a number of AI-controlled soldiers to follow you along with you and fight alongside you until they die. And there's levels of camp tokens of increasing cost. There's three levels total. And the more, the higher the level, obviously, the more soldiers you get, or the stronger, I think it's more like number of soldiers that you get more of. And they seem to cost a whole hell of a lot of money until you hit about level 10, and that's when they start getting to be more manageable, where you can probably buy one every run if you're doing well. So
yeah, technically, like the in-game justification they give for that is that by buying the camp tokens, you're providing money for the soldier's family if they don't make it out of the abyss.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why they're willing to go with you.
Yeah, and that's actually something that they mention on the surface. Like if you're walking around in Santiago or something, like one of the soldiers will tell you that. So sure.
Have you gotten to the mariachi skeleton yet?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that guy. Have you gotten to the violinist skeleton demon guy?
I got to him once, and I was smart enough to not talk to him again.
Oh, no. Okay, so there is a violinist demon guy that says, hey, I'm trapped. Can you, like, take this thing from me, and then I can be free? And, of course, you know, what David's referring to is, hell no, I'm not taking your thing. Go away, demon. But I was like, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm totally going to take this thing, and then he's going to come try to kill me. And sure enough, that's what's going to happen. So now
you take it, it's like, oh, by the way, whoever takes this, I'm obligated to come and try to kill. Like, it's not even, like, a mystery. He's just straight up like,
no.
Just so you know, at some point, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah, dems the brakes. Thanks, dude. You know, and he goes off. So, like, basically, after you, like, if you choose to free that demon guy, which you don't have to, but if you do, then, like, a violin shows up on the levels that he is going to come after and try to kill you. So you can actually see that on your map as well and be, like, forewarned. I have actually not had the opportunity to be in one of those levels. Because you know me, I'm the same person who's like, oh, it's the monster in Amnesia. I'm going to go run after it and see how it kills me. And then, like, it disappeared and I got sad. Mm. So, like, you know, same thing with, like, the violinist dude. He's going to kill me. I got to go see what he's going to do. But I haven't actually gotten the chance to see him yet. So more on that later.
Mm.
So combat-y type stuff. That's the thing that it's gotten the most criticism for because it is like a hybrid thing. Aside from the learning curve for the combat, double jumping on walls can sometimes be sticky because you sometimes need to run directly, like forward, be pushing forward into the wall and then double jump in order to actually latch onto the ledge at the top. So sometimes that can stick. It doesn't do it all the time, but certain parts it does. The hitboxes for grabs and throws can also be tricky, but are easy enough to account for after you've played for a little bit. Like the monk, the ghost monk that both David and I like playing, has a couple of different grab moves. So, you know, like that kind of becomes important for that character. Combat seems clunkier at first, mostly, again, because it's designed for you to have all your moves. Another unfortunate thing, at least in my book, is that there is a community-based unlock system that requires you to play the game co-op with friendly fire turned on in order to contribute to the overall unlocking stuff. Yeah, after a certain number of players defeat the warlock in that state, new phases of the game are released. Now, the problem is that I don't know what the status is and if all of the unlocks have already been opened or if there's more that need to be done. I have no idea.
I understand it, it's more of a continuous development thing.
Oh, okay.
So this is like the mechanic they're doing for that. So it's like every couple months they release a new thing.
Okay. Well, I can tell you just from like a very brief play with Tanner where he's like, but we got to turn the friendly fire on. And I'm like, no, dude, don't do it. And he's like, but it says I need to put the friendly fire on. So he puts the friendly fire on for his first playthrough with me. And he's plays like, you know, two battles and says, fuck this. And we go back out and we take it back off again. Like, nope.
So you're making this sound like anime South American Street Fighter Spelunky. Is that accurate?
I would say anime, not so much.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
Like it is extremely, extremely art nouveau. Like
okay,
your character, the fencer lady, is straight up like a Gibson girl or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, but No, the game, when I played through with Tanner, one of the first things he said is, this is really Soulsy. Like, I really like this. And the more he played it, like, we played one session for, like, 3 hours straight. And when he first started playing, he's like, huh, I don't know about blah, 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 blah. And was making, you know, commentary. I'm like, no, 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 wait a minute. You know, wait a little bit. Let's play a little bit more. Then you'll see. Just, you know. And as he unlocked his moves and stuff, and as he played more and got the hang of it, then he was like, oh, hey, this is really awesome. I'm liking this game more and more the more I play it. And I'm like, I know, it's really cool. Like, you know,
was he using Soulsy as a pejorative, or was that something that he started saying once he started getting the game?
Once he started understanding the game, and once we got to some of the harder, lower levels, like at one particular point, we were at a level right above where the warlock was, and there was a block, and this block had spikes on both sides of it, and it was on the platform across a chasm that you had to get across, and it would only go up and down, like, if you were right up on it. And so, like, it was this terrible, mean thing that you have to time it just right, otherwise you die. And it's, like, right before the warlock. And because it's procedurally generated, it's not like they set it up that way. That's just how the dice came out that time. So, like, there are certain areas where, like, some of the generated content is really rough, you know, really tough stuff, especially, of course, in the harder levels. But, no, he in some of the aesthetic, some of the concepts behind it and everything, Tanner was referring to all of that. And then, you know, some of the playstyle stuff, he was referencing Dark Souls for those things and liking it for those reasons.
We're coming up on time, Jala. I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to make sure that we end some time before midnight our time. Are there any kind of final thoughts on Abyss Odyssey before we move on to our next host?
Silence falls, killing six.
Sorry, what?
Nothing. Go on.
Okay, sorry. No, I didn't mean to drop this down, but I just want to, like I said at the beginning, I have work tomorrow.
Go.
Arby's, you gotta sleep.
Yeah. I gotta wake up at right? 5. I hear you.
Oh no, I got gotcha. Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure, like, so you've. I don't know if I have any questions. You described it very thoroughly. is there anything else about that game that we want to wrap up before we move on?
Play it.
Okay. I don't have anything to talk about, really. Like, I haven't played anything at depth. Like, we, Jolly, you and I did some trying to, but I feel like we've talked about that a lot on the show.
Yay.
So I'm going to throw over to Dennis for the games he's been playing.
Yeah, which I haven't been playing much in the way of traditional games. I mentioned I've been watching the International for Dota 2, and that is some crazy black magic going on the screen there. Like, I don't understand any of it. I know people get very excited at points, and that makes me excited too, and it's fun to watch in that way. And so I feel like I'm just getting to the point where I can, like, distinguish who's on what team, and that's helping. But I'm very intrigued, and it just the feel of it is very, very similar to watching a normal sporting event.
Normal.
Yeah, it was quote unquote normal. So yeah, but it's kind of made me blur the line between esport and sport in my mind, just because the kind of zeitgeist of what's going on is very, very similar. So yeah, I'll probably continue dipping in on that. I think it goes on all week. I don't think I'll play it. I would love to, but the games go, I think, 40 minutes on average.
Just about.
And if one person leaves, they screw over the entire team, even in casual play. And I think having that burden of responsibility to, like, be there and be present for 40 minutes is a bit more than I can commit to in a game right now. So,
yeah, from what I've seen, unless you are, like, competitive level play, you pretty much play the play NPCs.
Really? Huh. But it mark it down as a game that I'm perfectly happy to spectate and not play.
Yeah.
And I don't count that against it at all, because it's been a completely enjoyable experience to watch, even though, like I said, I'm kind of just starting to get my footing as to what's going on.
Are you watching games with kind of like commentators, people who are explaining kind of what's happening?
Oh, God, yes. Yes,
okay,
yes,
cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would know even less than nothing about what's going on if that were the case. So yeah, I've just been going to Dota2.com/watch, and that seems to have kind of the official stuff going on. I thought it was kind of nice. All the different sites had out primers on how to watch and where to watch. And so I read through one of those and I thought that was very, very useful.
Yeah. Polygon did a good piece on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other game I've been playing is actually a card game. So I, unbeknownst to me, Jen backed the Exploding Kittens Kickstarter.
Okay.
And those games arrived in the mail earlier this week. So it was just kind of a little surprise, you know, for no reason present.
From the Cards Against Humanity guy.
Yep. And the creator of the Oatmeal as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the theory behind the game is kind of Russian roulette meets Uno. Where, you know, Uno kind of gives you skip cards or attack cards, that sort of thing. You start with a shuffled deck and a certain amount of cards in your hand and start drawing, hoping that you don't draw an exploding kitten. Mm-hmm. And if you do draw an exploding kitten, you can use a very specific card to defuse it and put it back into the deck, or you lose if you don't have that card. And it becomes kind of this mind game once you start drawing exploding kittens of when you defuse it, you can put it back into the deck. But how deep into the deck should you put it? You're allowed to count down cards and kind of set it up to whatever you think would be advantageous. So do I put it right on top so that the next person gets it, or do I put it two down so that when they skip their turn, it'll go back to them? Or, you know, it becomes very mind gamey, which is what the fun is all about.
Exploding Kittens has nothing to do with Cards Against Humanity other than the fact that they are both card based things that I am ambivalent towards.
It's I think the shipping business. So the Cards Against Humanity people started kind of a business of publishing and distributing independent games. That's okay. Kind of really meant to be a little more direct than what you would get through your standard publishers.
Cool.
So it's meant to kind of empower smaller game developers. And okay, I think that's the connection.
Yeah.
Are they both made or either of them by the guy who does the Oatmeal?
Yes, the art is done. Yeah.
Yeah, Exploding Kittens is.
Oh, okay.
Which it's very oatmeal-y if you're familiar with that webcomic at all. Which I don't count against.
I don't care for it because it is a comic predicated entirely on SEO. But
SEO?
Yeah.
I have no idea what that means.
Search engine optimization. This is the second app I've explained it to you.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No. It's he is a marketer and therefore anathema to me. But you know what? I'm not going to dig myself a hole any further. The thing that I've heard about this game is that it's pretty. Do you feel that the randomness in it detracts from your ability to enjoy it? Like, is there any strategy that is not just how do we manipulate the randomness of it?
I haven't played it quite enough to answer that with confidence. It really depends on when the exploding kitten cards start showing up. So if just it happens that the cards are low in the deck, you kind of are drawing and drawing, and your hand kind of gets ridiculously big. But once the cards start showing up, I think there is a lot more strategy to it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's more about mind gaming your opponent and what they might have in their hand.
Yeah.
Than necessarily, you know, the actual actions of the cards. Yeah. The problem is, like I said, if the card is so low in the deck that you kind of know they have everything in their hands because you've drawn so many cards.
Yeah.
And at that point, it doesn't really matter what you do. You just hope that you can counter and counter and counter again enough times to make things worth it. But if the card comes out early in the game, then things are a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Because then you're having to deal with the explosive situation, much, you know, with many fewer resources.
The explosive kituation, yeah.
Yeah. The kituation. Do you guys watch the Jersey Shore Cat Edition? The kituation was phenomenal then. But yeah, so it's fun. Like I said, I haven't played it quite enough to really understand all the strategies going on, but I've enjoyed what I've played, and it's a fun little game that's easy to learn as well. So
yeah.
I can easily see busting this out at a party alongside like Jackbox or something like that.
Is it a two-player game or is it four.
So the base pack gets you 2 through 5, and then the I got the expansion pack or the Not Safe for Work edition, which gets you up to I think 9 players, something like that.
Because 9 people cannot work. No, I just I was drawing a correlation between Not Safe for Work and 9 people, but
oh.
Three hams will kill him. 9 hams will render him non-functional.
Yeah. So what? There, I follow.
So what? Someone on one of my friends on Facebook, I saw just the other day, got this game, and apparently when it arrived at their apartment, they finally got it along with a note saying, "Note: this will get through." This will get to you much faster if you stop receiving packages that say exploding in big letters on the side.
You know.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, that's why nobody's received an Anthrax CD from Amazon in the past 13 years.
Yeah. But they put a lot of nice touch. It's clear that they had money to burn on this game, but they it seems like they've really put it towards doing nice things for the people who supported them. So yeah. Like there was a nice customized comic for the that was drawn for Jen. And then the pack actually meows when you open it, which was delightful.
Oh, was it like a greeting card kind of thing with a chip?
Yeah, like a little light sensitive thing in it, which when you opened it up.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I think they at least tried, it seems, to kind of really reward the people who jumped in on it. And there was kind of a little piece talking about the philosophy behind, I want to say it's Black Box Games, is that Cards Against Humanity spinoff or whatever you want to call it, that's helping indie board game publishers.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
cool.
It really seems like that they really want to see smaller kind of stuff succeed. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Huh. Is that all about exploding kittens?
That is all about exploding kittens.
Do you want to button it up?
Yay.
I do.
The credit. So yes, thank you so much for listening to level number 115. We passed a milestone recently, didn't we, Dennis?
We did. So there's been so many responses on the Facebook page because there are so many people who have liked us on Facebook. Yeah. We are officially above 150, which is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Woohoo!
Yeah, so let's shoot for 200 next. Like, tell your friends and all that good stuff. I'm so happy you're here. Let us let's
video
keep
games. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Let's keep this train rolling, right?
Yeah, we're about video games, so we like watching numbers go up.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. My goal is that eventually we will be at a point where we can keep level with the viewers who have liked us versus number of Pokemons.
Oh. David, that is an unrealistic expectation. There are like 40,000 Pokemon
now.
Right now. Like there are more Pokemon than there are species on the planet Earth.
It's okay. No longer fair a enough. Rational number.
That, yeah,
that's impossible.
It's expressible solely in alien geometries. So
it's the alien geometry type Pokemon that pushed you over the edge.
Yes, the alphabet one from Silver, I guess, which really frustrated me. But continuing here, what I would ask you to do is go to iTunes and leave us either a star rating or a review. We really appreciate those when they come through, and it has been a minute since we have received those. So we will look forward to seeing those if you are so kind to submit them to us. I'm trying to think of other stuff that is here, but I want to this episode has already run kind of long, so I want to make sure that we don't go too much longer. So I will say is I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I am in all the places, Jala-chan.
Yes. And until next time, don't forget the extra dignity sauce. Eat the leg. So yeah, all four titles that I mentioned at the kind of the start of the episode, those are the only ones I had.
Brown, I like extra dignity sauce.
Brown sauce on a hot dog, dignity sauce extruded through a sluice, and dander gravy. Was there anything else that might be considered?
I honestly, we don't need to add to that, you know.
Dignity sauce, there we go.
No.